You know what? Hit record. Let's get this going
right
let's
now.
Go. Let's go.
Let's go. All right. Here we go.
Welcome to Hallway Conversations. We're a trio of educators who have plenty of questions about teaching and learning and school culture, and we believe in the value of reflection and collaboration as we seek to keep growing as teachers. This podcast is our place for thinking out loud together about issues in education and why they might matter to Christian educators. Welcome to the conversation.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 108th episode of the Hallway Conversations podcast. My name's Matt Beemers.
I'm Abby DeGroat.
And I'm Dave Mulder.
Friends, we want to thank our sponsors at CASE, the Center for the Advancement of Christian Education. To learn more about the different ways that CASE can support our school board, your leadership team, teachers, or community, we encourage you to visit their website at case.org. That's www.case.org. Finally, if you have a suggestion for a podcast topic, we'd love to hear from you. Send your suggestions to hallwayconvospod@gmail.com. That's hallwayconvospod@gmail.com. Today, folks, we are grateful to be joined in the hallway by Daryl DeBoer. Daryl, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, hey, folks. Thanks for the invitation to be part of this. It just feels really great to be part of Hallway Conversation, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
For our listeners, Daryl is a friend of ours, but he's also the K-12 Director of Learning for Surrey Christian School in Surrey, British Columbia. He's a co-creator of Teaching for Transformation, which we'll talk about a little bit today. And he's also the Director of Teaching for Transformation for CASE. Daryl's been a science teacher, outdoor educator, and administrator in Switzerland, India, and numerous Canadian Christian schools. He's passionate about students, staff, and schools exploring their calling in God's story. Daryl, it's good to be here. You're a dear friend for all of us. I've had the opportunity to work with you back in British Columbia and specifically on Teaching for Transformation, and have seen the impact that you've had in that specific school and now across many schools in North America. Some of our listeners might be familiar with Teaching for Transformation. Some might be in schools that have implemented it. Some might be in schools that are thinking about it. And we have listeners who maybe have never heard about it. Can you just talk a little bit about what Teaching for Transformation is when someone says, hey, tell me about, I know some people refer to it as TFT. So for our listeners, if you hear TFT, that's what we're talking about. But how do you respond when someone says, what's this Teaching for Transformation? What is it? What is it not?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, you'd think after 15 years being part of the story, I'd have a good answer, but I feel pretty consistent that I failed to answer that question well. But I'll give it a go, and I'll give my latest answer to the question. I tend to swirl around three things when I talk about Teaching for Transformation. One, it is a framework, and that's super important, but it's a framework that equips teachers, empowers teachers to root their learning explicitly into God's story. So there's, you know, if we talk about Christian education, or in our case, it's Surrey Christian School, it gets at this Christian thing. It gets at the distinctiveness. So that's one thing about TFT. It embeds learning within God's story, empowers learners to play their part in God's story. Christian. The second thing gets at this school thing, actually. What is TFT? It's a framework of practices that gets at deeper learning. So if we call ourselves a Christian school, let's be really good at this school thing. Let's be really good at this learning thing, this deeper learning. So that's the second part. And then the third part is TFT is a professional growth journey. All the stuff centers around development of teacher skills and passions. It's a strategic plan for growth in instruction. So schools that do this TFT thing, they're focusing on this Christian thing. Let's get better at that. Let's get better at this school thing. And if someone says, what do you want about? Well, here's our plan for professional growth. So those seem to be the kind of the three big parts of TFT.
Daryl, you mentioned, hey, you've been 15 years into this and, you know, you're kind of refining what it is, but can you just share a little bit of the history of TFT? Like, who was involved? Who are some of the names we should just mention kind of to honor that story and where it comes from? Can you tell a bit of that?
Yeah, that's, TFT's had a ton of contributors over the year. There's The origins go to Edmonton Christian School and some of the other Christian schools in Alberta. There's a conversation of these six folks that sat around a table. They can trace it back to a moment where they were, what is this distinctiveness that we need to hold on to in Christian education? And then there's a few individuals and a few schools that really dove into it in these early years of trying to figure that out. Folks like Doug Monsma, Brian Dorneval, Peter Buseman, Gail Monsma, Edmonton Christian School, Covenant Christian School. And those early days of TFT actually centered around essential questions and unit planning. To Elaine Brower, like she was influential in Peter and Doug and some of that early stuff. And then it leaked beyond the mountains, and others started to hear about this, in particular through lines. Okay, through lines is kind of this part of TFT that goes forward. To your earlier question, Matt, like what isn't TFT? My answer to that is actually through lines. But through lines is the one part of TFT that everyone seems to be familiar with. So it from Alberta came like BC, and that's where I encountered. I actually encountered the through lines, and I'm super excited about that. Like, man, we got some language here now. Grade seven socials. What is this really about? Well, it's about community building. It's about justice seeking. It's about idolatry discerning. Like, so there's an attractiveness to that. And so that led to movement in the US, schools like Sioux Falls Christian and Avail Academy, who at that time was Calvin Christian. They were interested in this. And then a couple schools started using it, Sioux Center Christian, Unity Christian. And so now it's throughout North America. It's beyond the borders of North America. There's lots of people that are just part of the ongoing story of TFT.
How many schools is it in now, Daryl, if you would guess? And is it only schools kind of in that reformed tradition, for lack of a better description, or is it extended into different faith-based schools? And what do you think is a tr why are schools attracted to it?
Definitely roots in the Reformed Christian schools, definitely. But I'd say the majority of interest now in working through cases is not within the Reformed schools, actually. And it's crossed over into many different types of Christian schools. And I think part of that is the work of CASE, because we're across lines in the different types of Christian education. Why are people attracted to it? I'll put it this way: the people who are attracted to it just feel a discontent with what we're doing right now, right? They believe in Christian education. The desire for Christian education is huge, but there's a discontent in how we're doing it. And those seem to be the folks that reach out and say, "Hey, tell me a little bit more about this TFT thing."
Oh, thanks. Dave or Abby?
Well, I'm wondering, Daryl, you mentioned through lines, and I'm familiar enough with teaching for transformation. I know that is a big deal, but that's not the only kind of core practice to this, right? Could you tell us a little bit more, like what is the structure of teaching for transformation look like as far as thinking about the curriculum side of it, maybe?
So we speak of core practices within Teaching for Transformation. We speak of essential practices within Teaching for Transformation. And the core hover around our deep hope for our Christian schools, the mission and vision, the deep hope for a teacher. And like, so how do we make this deep hope come alive? How do we ensure it's just not like a grossly unwarranted hope? Well, we have the core practices, storyline, through lines, and what we call flex or formational learning experiences. And if I was to sum those up, it's into the language of see the story, see God's story, live God's story. So the core practices are about inviting teachers and students to see the story at work that we're part of and to invite us to play our part in God's story. So those are the functions of the core practices, and the essential practices that are woven throughout, that gets at that good pedagogy piece. Like, let's do this while doing really good learning. Like, let's be good at this learning thing as we embed in God's story. We don't have to choose. Matter of fact, like 1 + 1 = 3 here, right? We're trying to break down this dualism. Now's God time, now's not God time. Or, oh man, I sure love to be a big good teacher and do good pedagogy, but we got to do this God thing right now. Like, let's just remove all of that stuff.
That's actually one of the things that it gets me so excited about TFT as an education professor, right? Is the good pedagogy and good pedagogical practices that are embedded into the framework. Can you talk about those just a little bit? Like, what are some of the ways that you encourage teachers to grow in their pedagogy, and what are some of those practices that TFT introduces?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. I think it's one of the important, steps in the development of TFT was like, okay, let's make sure we're doing good learning here. And so, I think it's super important to name the impact of EL education on the development. Like, it's part of that story of the development of teaching for transformation.
I
And
don't
if
know
I
that
was,
everybody knows what that is, Daryl. Do you want to just say what that is?
yeah, EL, so formerly Expeditionary Learning, it's a, I don't know, it's a group of schools mostly throughout the US. It's a combination that came together from like Outward Bound Foundation and Harvard Graduate School of Education. Found like, Outward Bound, you do good this formation stuff. Harvard, you do this rigor thing. What happens if we brought this together? And so they have practices that aim at engagement and formation. And like, oh, well, that's attractive. So let's embed that within God's story, right? So that's like again, what's not up for debate is the embedding within God's story. What are we doing here? Now, how will we do, right? So let's bring in these formational practices. Like, if we're going to shape humans, let's shape them within the story versus a competing story that we also find ourselves in. So the pedagogy, Abby, to your question, I think in general we aim at a sense of belonging. Our work is important, you matter, and engagement. So all like, so opening and closing circles would be some of the pedagogy of like, listen, I see you. I see you. We have important work to do here. We can't do it without you. That's a practice, and that's an ethos, and that's a core belief in who the learner is. So that's a huge idea. How do I do that? Well, I land it in circles. I land it in opening and closing and reflection, right? And that reflection would be another practice we would name. Like, how does this fit within God's story? Let's invite the student voice into this pedagogy that invites student voice. That's that engagement thing, right? Like, oh, not because I have to, I get to. Like, and we want,
Speaking my language, yeah.
yeah, like, and so the work's got to matter then.
Yeah.
Like, students, I just think about me. For so long, I counted on my relationship for students to do the work. They were highly compliant. For the most part, they liked me. Okay, Mr. DeBoer said so. But if you're to really ask them, like, why are you doing this? Well, Mr. DeBoer said so. I don't really want to upset him, and he can become a bit sarcastic when he's upset. So I'm going to be compliant here. It's in my best interest, and I don't want to upset him. Let's
I
have
never want to
engagement.
upset you.
What's,
Let's.
yeah, Matt, yeah, you're the most compliant person I know. But how do I authentically invite my students to be engaged? When I talk about engaged, yes, they're paying attention, so that part of engagement, but engaged, like, I want to bring this with me. This will shape me. When this class is over, this is part of me. That's the second part of engagement. Yeah, so the practices that get at that. And we can't do that by just counting on relationship. We can't do it without relationship, but relationship's the starting, not the end point. And I used to think it was the end point. Okay, great. I got great relationship. Good. Do I have to become a good teacher now? Not really. I have good relationship. Actually, it's the starting point. And man, that was a light bulb moment. Like, oh, Now I better start going here. They're with me.
That's a shift. Yeah.
Oh, huge, huge.
Yeah. Hey, Daryl, earlier, I think you used the phrase pious wish. And I know there's this quote that, and I'm looking at it right now on the teachingfortransformation.org website, Wolterstorff quote, "Nothing but a pious wish and a grossly unwarranted hope. Students trained to be passive and non-creative in school will suddenly, upon graduation, contribute to the formation of a Christian culture." I've also heard you share a story about dumpster projects. And I'm just wondering if like how that story, and maybe you can share a bit about that of those projects, and then this Wolterstorff quote, and then hey, like what is this whole, you've used the phrase real work, real need, real people, which seems the antithesis of dumpster project. I don't know. Can you just talk about all of that maybe and how real work fits in with TFT?
Yeah, what do we got? We got 5 hours. Yeah, there's a ton there. So I had a pretty, another great moment in my teaching career, where my 11th grade biology students did this project, okay? And it had to do with habitats and ecosystems, and they had to build something. It was all great. It wasn't great actually, but I thought it was all great. It got me through a week of school. And so they got their assignments back. They got their grades back. And let's be very clear, they got a grade back. They did not get an assessment. Okay. They got a grade. It was like, I didn't, everything was awful about it. And then it's the end of the day. The bell goes. I'm like, hey, grab your projects, bring them back. You don't want to leave them here. If you leave them, I'm throwing them in the dumpster. They all got up. And these are like the kids liked me. Okay. They got up and they walked out the door. Bye, Mr. Moore, have a good night. Bye, Mr. Moore, have a good night. No one grabbed their project. No one. Go ahead, Mr. DeBoer. Toss them in the dumpster. So that's this no more dumpster thing. So this real work, real needs, real people, it goes back to can we? Yes, we can. How do we invite students into work that matters? Like there's this eternalness to this, right? And again, now you hear the echoes of the story that we are part of, right? So I do think it's a fundamental question that Christian schools need to ask themselves, whether you do TFT or not, how will you invite students into work that is explicitly connected to the kingdom, the building of all things, the making new of all things, this Wolterstorff, the formation of Christian culture, because if we don't invite them into opportunities to practice, as Wolterstorff says, well, then what, at graduation, they suddenly can do this? Like we flick a switch as they walk across the stage, and oh, now I know how to do this. So there's that story of being able to contribute to Christian culture. There's this story that my work is part of the building of God's kingdom. And there's this story of work that engagement. There's that engagement thing again. So real work that meets real needs for real people is inviting kids into work that is both kingdom, like this stuff matters while I master curriculum, and it builds God's kingdom here and now. We don't have to wait upon graduation. Actually, kindergarten students, we got important kingdom work to do. I'm going to invite you into that. Otherwise, we form, either way, we're forming humans. We formed into think, this is kingdom time. This is not kingdom time. Put aside the kingdom. We're doing math. Well, and then what? We're gonna have a lack of duality in our life upon graduation when I've been shaped to have duality throughout my Christian education?
Well, it's like adventures and missing the point of the whole thing, right? Like that's Daryl, I remember one of the first times that I hung out with you, you gave me the language of the rule of 60, right? This idea that we need to focus on the right 60. And maybe just for our audience, I think that would be a great one to unpack, like the difference between 60 day, 60 or 60 minute, 60 day, 60 year learning.
So that comes like understanding by design type stuff, right? Like what is like essential, what is important, and what is worthwhile. And the bottom rung there, it's still worthwhile, right? But maybe I only need to know that for 60 minutes, the worthwhile stuff, so that I can get at the important stuff. And then the important stuff, I am going to hang on to that for 60 days. But the important allows us to get at the essential. And what are we talking about essential? This is that 60-year stuff. Now we're talking human formation. And I think as teachers, if we use that as a way to design, what it did for me is I used to like just treat all curriculum as equal. And that's simply not true. But like I'm a math science guy. I literally, so here's another confession of horrible teaching. I would count up my learning objectives at the beginning of a year, like, okay, 112, and I got 83 days to do this. I'd be like, hey, Mr. Principal, do we have school on this day? I need to know if I'm going to have class on November 14th. Like, who cares? But I needed to do my calculation. 112 divided by 84. Now I will cover 1 point, blah, 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 every day. They were all equal. Now, I gave myself 1 week of review for the final exam. And man, what a good teacher I was because we were done on time. As soon as I started treating curriculum as essential, important, and worthwhile, well, that was different. And you can let go of things after an hour. Did I cover it? Absolutely. Did we engage it? Absolutely. Release it. We're moving on into the important stuff now. And my test didn't have to show that stuff. And before, man, every test got to cover everything. Yeah, it's another game changer on the road to becoming less horrible teacher, Daryl.
I really love that as an analogy, though, right? Because how often do we get caught up in the 60-minute stuff, like all the little
Oh,
minute details of the work that
yeah.
we're doing? And it's not that it's not worthwhile. That's why I appreciate you saying that so
It's
much. But
worthwhile.
to keep the long game in mind, what do these kids need to carry with them for the rest of their life? That 6-year learning, that's a really big deal. So thanks for unpacking that with us.
I use the example of mitosis. Everyone learned mitosis at one point, but
Yeah,
like when
you
I'm,
did. Oh,
yeah, exactly.
sorry.
Every whoops, beautiful. Everyone had mitosis covered for them at one point. And
There you
there's the
go.
distinction between teaching and learning. And like, let's just name that. Just because I covered
Yeah.
it doesn't mean we learned it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I used to just think teaching was covering stuff.
Yeah.
It's not.
No.
Like, could we actually destroy the word teaching and just somehow use the word learning? How would that impact what we do? Like, I taught it. No, you didn't, because they didn't learn it. You didn't teach it. It would just
Ooh,
change things.
yeah.
What happens if we
Yeah.
weren't called teachers? I don't know what we'd be called, but I think it would change things.
Daryl, one, thank you for that. Yeah, that's actually really convicting just thinking about my own class. So, I'm also in getting to know you over the last year, talking about TFT, but just good pedagogy. You've really talked a lot lately, it feels like, in our conversations about the power of reflection, in terms of deeper learning. Can you just talk a little bit about that piece of learning and why that's important, and maybe even just what that's looked like in your experiences?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm still shaping in it. It's,
Yeah.
the journey of understanding the significance of it, but it taps into, I think, what we're just talking about, the difference between teaching and learning. I think what, so on one level, reflection just creates opportunity for students to sit in some information and to make sense of it and to make meaning and connections. The exact, like the, I remember reading a study where the amount of time needed is somewhere like 4.5 minutes to actually take a brain to take some information, make a connection, and put it somewhere like and say, this might be important. Maybe I should be able to retrieve this later. And I was just like, oh my word, I never give 4.5 minutes. So on one level, actually, reflection, what's important about reflection is building a lesson plan, building your design. Ensuring students or the learners, better language, the learners have opportunity to make meaning. Like literally, it takes time. So it's on one hand, what's important about reflection is pacing and creating those opportunities. Like, so then I got to talk to someone about that. I got to be able to grapple with an idea. I got to like ask the so what, now what, right? Get beyond what. Oh, that's the information. Well, so what? Why is it important? Now what? How now shall I live because of this information? And I think that's the second point that I'm growing, like around reflection is getting at the now what? How now shall I live? And I go, but within Christian education, I think about our school's mission and visions, and they're always into the the so what, now what, right? Like we talk about shaping humans. Humans are going to be, you know, this, right? Whatever your mission vision is, it's generally kingdom oriented. But so much of what we do in the classroom is what. And our mission and vision is, well, so what, now what, so what, now what, so what, now what. And there's just this gap between the what and the so what, now what. And I think reflection allows that. We close that gap. We remove that like chasm.
One of the things that was really struck me that coming back to teaching for transformation is you actually at one point, I think I heard you say something like, oh, if I had to rename it, I would rename it teaching from transformation. That really struck me. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I feel like that's just such a small change and yet it feels significant, but I'm trying to understand why.
Yeah, that comes from when we walk the journey with schools and with teachers and the implementing of the practices of TFT, okay? And it is a journey. That's, you know, what isn't TFT? A one-day protee. We don't do that, right? Hey, we'll get lots of requests. Can you come on in and can we do, you know, do this one day? And it's great. And I feel like we could have a really high engaging experience, but we just wouldn't get anywhere. And, you know, by Wednesday, it'd be done. Anyways, so when we go on this journey, what I've seen over and over and over, and it just really matters, is that the work of teaching for transformation actually works at the educator first, at the teacher. And it's when it does that internal thing, then now they can invite students into it. And it took me a long time to, like, I should have realized it from the get-go. Slow learner over here. Like, of course, TFT exists about the formation of students. That's why, like, okay, let's, like, that's why school forms students. But actually, it forms educators first and foremost. And there is this, when educators really see that what they're doing, like, I'm not covering math today. I'm inviting myself and my students into God's story through my lesson on da da da. Well, that's just a game changer. Like, that's what, like, we're not just doing a podcast today. The four of us are playing our part in God's story through this conversation right here and right now. This is kingdom building stuff. That internal conviction of what we're doing then allows us to invite others with authenticity into God's story, that teaching from transformation. So that's where kind of the playing with language happens. If the practices of TFT, if I externalize them and they remain a pedagogical approach and not this like internal thing, it will not work within the classroom. It just won't.
Hey, Daryl, just a follow-up. In a previous life, we worked together, still in recovery over that.
Yeah, my counselor's made a killing off of that relationship.
We were working at a school where we were trying to bring like get TFT going. And so there was this learning leaders team, and I thought it was great as a principal. You guys would meet. This TFT was a classroom thing. And then you came into my office one day and said some sort of kind, but very specific and very helpful words to me about the role a principal has to have or the role a school leader has to have in implementing TFT or maybe any framework for change, like if we want to go beyond that. Because sometimes I feel like, and in my mind, right, it was like, well, this is a teaching and learning thing. I'm the school leader. You called me out on that in a good way. And I think I've articulated that to you before. I'm forever thankful for that. But why was that so important to you? Or why should that be important to school leaders to be like, you need to be part of this?
Yeah, there's I remember that moment.
Oh, I do too. Trust me. I live in Iowa now.
totally. I mean, I've had many moments with you, but that one does stick out. I was nervous.
Me too. I was scared.
There's a lots of I have lots of thoughts about that. I'll try to articulate something.
Carol, can I just to give some context, we have school leaders who are listening to this podcast and just a good word for you from them about it. Because I think I needed to hear it and I know they do too.
Yeah, I think So, okay, maybe I'll just name a couple things that feel important to me around this conversation. Okay. And then maybe we can construct something from that. One is this idea that, this isn't just TFT. I'd say any initiative within a school, any change, okay, any new way of thinking or doing is built on a few things. Things that matter would be leadership and culture. Okay, like you can come in with the best idea ever and actually give it a phenomenal professional development experience. All that goes away if the leadership and culture is not in place to nurture those ideas. Okay, culture eats planning for breakfast. And leadership, I think, like one of their primary responsibilities, whether you name it or not, is actually just you create the culture within a school. You just do. Whether you acknowledge it or not, culture is determined by leader. Like leaders come and go within Christian schools, and then Christian schools take on different flavors. Why? Because leaders create culture. So for any initiative to take root, we need the primary culture center to be part of that. And so, like, oh, that sits with someone else. That creates culture. And so there, so that feels significant. I also think principals. Or school leaders, like there's a traditional authority that comes with the position. So I occupy director of learning. I can jolt people, I can disrupt people, I can design professional development. At the end of the day, your teachers are like, what does Matthew think about this? Where's Matthew? And like, okay, get good, Daryl. Great. Let's have lunch someday. I wonder what my principal thinks. Like the positional authority sits within school leaders or principals. It just does. So
And
my,
me sitting in my office communicates something.
well, it's cultural. It sends this message of stuff like, oh, I guess, is it that important? Is it really core to who we are? Because why isn't our school leadership here? Right? Like whenever something really important is happening, well, who's there? The school leader. How do we know it's important? The school leader's there. So professional development without school leaders, man. And I've not seen an exception to that. I just haven't. There's something to, so another piece on that is like, okay, let's say we're working on this, inviting kids into God's story, and I'm creating my storyline and stuff like that. And if your school leaders aren't there and they don't know their staff's storyline of how, well, what kind of conversation's that? Like, hey, how was your day? Versus, man, can you tell me a story of how you invited your kids into God's? I know your storyline is this. And I know you're working on this real work experience. Well, that's a different level of conversation. And it comes
Absolutely.
down to this idea of school leaders need to provide both support and accountability. If we don't know what's going on, we don't know how to specifically support it, and that voice of accountability is also lost.
Absolutely.
No, that was like I said, I know we can joke about it, but that was important learning for me in my own leadership development, right? Like even physically being in a space as a leader communicates something.
And I still like I watch it over and over and over again. Like, so then, all right, I'll be there, and but I'll have my computer open the whole time doing emails. Well, actually, please don't be here. And I know that can be offensive. But that's how important it is. Oh, they have their computer open. Like, we are deliberate in like tech-free professional development for lots of reasons. That's one of them.
Oh, no, beautiful.
Yeah.
Hey, one other, you've shared a little bit about your teaching journey, Daryl. Just a bit of a reflection, maybe in general. Just think things you wish first year teacher Daryl knew, or we work with undergrad students who are about to go into the profession. What are things would you tell yourself, or what are things that we could encourage our future teachers in around good pedagogy, good learning? I don't know, just share
Yeah.
some wisdom with us if you can.
Yeah, great question. Don't be as sarcastic. Like serious, like seriously. Man, do I lament my sarcasm in the classroom. And I got away with it because of relationship with key students, the power. Like I didn't understand the power that came with the position, and So that's a total lament. I can imagine, not imagine, bad choice of words. I can picture the students that were impacted by that. So that's something, man. If I go back and change that, I'll go back to my earlier statement around, okay, Christian school. So this, what I wish I knew earlier in my career was actually how to do this Christian education. I was hired with the assumption, and I remember interview question about Christian education, and I had some sort of answer. I didn't know how to do this, and we encounter it time after time after time after time. We will have teachers that have been in this thing for 35 years in Christian schools, and they will come up and say, I didn't know how to do this. I wish I knew this is how it could be done. How exactly do we do Christian education? I think if we walked into a school and we were super honest about that conversation, there's a lot of teachers like, please, I know I can't say this out loud, but help me with this. I know I should know how to do this. I don't know how to do this. So that's something I wish I knew. I wish I had the practices of TFT that took the big ideas that can hover at 30,000 feet. I could talk Christian education. I didn't know how to do Christian education. I wish I had the practices that landed it in my classroom. That teaching piece, like pure pedagogy, I wish I understood assessment like I understand assessment now. Formative assessment, the importance of form, I was like test quiz, final lab report guy. Man, I wish I had people affirming me and equipping me in that reflection opportunities is assessment, that you really, really want the students to know where they are in terms of their position to a learning target. And we want you as the teacher to know where the students are in terms of their position to a learning target. If that framing of assessment was given to me and then I was empowered within it, I think we would have done a whole lot more learning throughout the years. So I wish I knew more about assessment, and I wish the schools set me up with the structures for authentic assessment. The schools, and I think most schools still are set up for assessment that doesn't get at learning. I have a favorite quote right now. That's what I do. I go from favorite quote to favorite quote. This one's from Bonhoeffer, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Something along the lines like, if you get on the wrong train or if you board the wrong train, there's like it's silly or it's no use running along the corridor in the other direction. Like if you board the wrong train, it's silly to be changing, like running along the corridor. You're on this train going the wrong way. Get off that train. And I think about that all the time in terms of our Christian schools. Like, where are we going? What train have we put our teachers on? And then maybe can we name the direction we're doing with assessment? And then like it's silly then they're like, hey teachers, can you please do th like we send them running up the corridor, but they're on a train barreling in a different direction. No wonder they're exhausted. And I think the assessment thing's just one example. I think there's so many examples within our Christian schools. Our trains are barreling in a direction, and we're asking the teachers to run up the corridor in a different direction. The school leaders, like, stop the train.
That's pretty powerful, man. Stop the train.
And it's daunting a little bit. I'll be honest. It's daunting to think about.
Can you say more about that, Abby, just out of curiosity?
Like if I'm a school leader, how do I even begin to stop the train, right?
Oh, totally. 100. Yeah. Like in the community, like, because here's the problem. Here's one of the parts of the problem. You've invited the community onto that train.
Yeah, that's
They've
right.
gotten on that train because of your invitation where you said you're going. And now you're going to stop that train?
Feels like a bait and switch almost.
Yeah, but we don't even realize the trains. Podcast number two, we don't realize the trains that we've set this thing. We have set up Christian education on a system that was meant to pump out factory workers. We never built a new system. We
No.
just built it in that system. The
Yeah.
train direction was set. Like,
Yeah.
why is Christian education exhausting? Because we built it on a train going in a spot that we said we didn't want to go. Like, look at that. No wonder they're exhausted.
Need to reimagine, right?
Oof.
Like a whole different way of being as a school community, and to align our practices better than to what we actually are on about. That's what I'm hearing you say, right? That
And are we actually on about that?
yeah, that's
Like,
right.
are we actually on about it? Like, what's
Are
our
we on
train
about what
say?
we say we're on about, is what you're
What's our
saying?
train say about what we're on about?
Yeah.
The number
Right.
one, back to Dave's word, the number one thing that plagues us is a lack of imagination
Absolutely.
around education, Christian education in particular in this conversation. We just have a lack of imagination. I don't know, I just do what I do. This is what I experienced as a 6-year-old. I kind of liked it. Put your desk in a row, please. Like we're living within our 6-year-old imagination around education. And we repeat that every time. Every time we put a new teacher in the classroom, they go back to 6-year-old teacher and they set it up accordingly.
I've used that analogy before with future teachers, right? Talking, it's like the Hunger Games, right? The people who win the Hunger Games get to be the game makers, right? It's like students who are good at school, they are the ones who go off and become teachers. Not exclusively, but often that's kind of the way things play out, right? You love school, so you become a teacher. So that's a
Man.
self-perpetuating system, you
I
know?
get to do the same thing every year for the rest of my life. Great. We
Perfect.
hire people with an affinity for the repeating of patterns. And then we say,
Ooh.
why don't you change? Because you never hired someone who changed.
Yeah,
No.
that's right.
You hired someone who said, I'd like to repeat this pattern for the rest of my life. Like that's a train that we're built with. That's the engine of the train. Why don't we
We
change?
hired you. We hired you to keep doing what we've always been doing.
Totally. Like we're system maintenance people. We're not like the entrepreneurs go out there and get a different job.
Daryl, is that why in some communities TFT is just a, I don't say hard sell isn't the right language, but that it's like, whoa, like this is like this change is too hard? Or do people even say, but we already do this?
Yeah, so you have the we already do that.
Yeah.
And that's, fine. Okay. But yeah, you're looking for people. Like that's that holy discontent.
Yeah.
Like it's not even a secret ingredient. It is the ingredient. It is the essential ingredient. We need someone who is not infatuated with what we do. If you're infatuated with the current way of being, TFT is not for you. It is
Sure.
not for you.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay. I want to know that in my first and second conversation. I don't want to know that 2 years in.
Yeah, right.
Like, so that's been a big piece of TFT discernment in this, call it year zero. Like, do you really want this? Like, do you really want this?
You really know what you're saying yes to?
Yeah, totally. And it's
Well,
on
that's right.
me. It's on me to
Who do you have that conversation with, the school leader?
school leaders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm way better at it. But it
Oh, I'm
means that there's
sure. What's it, Daryl? Like, is that what you mean? Like, you're way better at it?
But it also means that we have like lots of schools that reach out that don't do TFT. But
Well,
it means.
but that's transparency in helping them understand, like, this is what's actually involved. Like, if you say you want to do this, here's what it's going to look like, right? Yeah.
But better job security is if I don't do that very well.
Yeah,
No, seriously.
no, I'm with you.
Like, oh, you want, sure, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's
Because
go.
telling half truth is your spiritual gift.
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very good at hiding my opinion.
False.
Friends, we know your time is valuable. We want to thank you for joining us today for another hallway conversation. Whether it's this day, this week, or this month, we hope that the Lord gives you what you stand in need of. And we'd like to send you from here with this blessing. So to our friends and to Daryl, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you, give you peace, and give you peace, and give you peace. Amen. Thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you have a good week.
Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you, Daryl.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks so much. And yeah, just
Yeah,
super
lot to think
appreciate.
about.
Yeah,
Yeah,
totally.
thanks
Thanks
for
for
the
pushing
invite. I
on it.
appreciate that.
Appreciate
Yeah.
your work, brother. Keep going.
All right.
Yes, good to see you.
This podcast was literally dreamed up during one of our actual hallway conversations. Our music is by Ethan Mulder. Hallway Conversations is created and produced by Matt Beemers, Abby DeGroat, and Dave Mulder. Hey, we have a favor to ask of you. Would you be willing to rate this podcast or write a review in your podcast app? Or if you found this conversation interesting or helpful, would you consider sharing it on your social media? Those things really do help podcasters out, and we would be so, so grateful. Thanks for listening, friends.
I have an update. So yesterday I got interviewed for the radio.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Well, you are a big deal.
Yeah. And halfway through during a commercial break, the guy goes, "You interview really well. Have you been on a show before?" And I'm like, "Well, actually,
let me tell you.